Okay, everybody see that? Okay, all right. So we're continuing on. This is actually part two of what I was starting to share last week about how the tabernacle in the wilderness is really a pattern for how we should function as a community. You know, and one of the things that, you know, we want to build is a community, you know, a feeling of community and being connected with one another, not just, you know, having a service every week, people come, people go. You know, we want to not just have a congregation, but we want to be a community. So part two is the divine order in the community and what the apostolic scriptures teach us. And one thing that, you know, I've noticed just being 20 years in the Messianic movement, where more and more people are leaving the traditional churches and coming back to Torah and want to worship the way, you know, Yeshua worshiped in the first century churches worship, is that when they come out, it seems, you know, I see a trend, they come out with a lot of bitterness and anger, like, well, why weren't, this wasn't taught in the church? Well, why didn't you read your Bible? You know, it's like, I wasn't bitter. I was like, hey, this is great. You know, I appreciated everything I've learned along the way. Even when it was wrong, I learned what was wrong. You know, and I appreciate it because every step of our walk, it's a period of growth. And again, I talk to people, and because they're so mad at the church, they don't want to be involved in the Messianic community. And what that does is it hurts the community. We need to thank you, Father, that you brought me into this walk, that you revealed a deeper walk with you, and that, you know, we can't be bitter or angry. And one of the issues I see is that, you know, there's, and this is really part of our, going to be part of our discipleship program too, is a lack of commitment, a lack of people wanting to be committed and use their gifts in the body. And one thing too that the Ruach, you know, was speaking to my heart, you know, people talk a lot about the Jezebel spirit, you know, to where everything's like a Jezebel. Well, the Jezebel spirit is really a part of witchcraft and the occult and pagan worship. But what's going on, and they attack from without, but what's going on within the body of Messiah is a spirit of Korah. And what's a spirit of Korah? It's a spirit of not being content with what God called you to do, but always going after what you weren't called to do. And that was the issue with Korah. He was part of the priesthood. He was, you know, a Levite. He was, you know, part of the, you know, working the tabernacle, taking and setting apart. But he wanted Moses' job. Well, God didn't call him to walk in Moses' job. And if you know the story, if, you know, he, you know, God quickly put an end to that. But I see that, again, within the community of Messiah, everybody wants to do what somebody else is doing instead of seeking God, Father, what have you called me to do? Because ultimately, we stand before him, when we stand before Yeshua, you know, he's going to say, were you faithful in doing what I called you to do? And unfortunately, people always think that somebody else's job is better than the one God gave them. And every job in the body of Messiah is important and is needed. You know, in this movement as well, we've got a lot of teachers. There's good teachers and there's some not so good, but that's, you know, everything. There's always good ones and there's always ones that shouldn't be teaching at all. But we don't have a lot of strong communities. I know, you know, I talk to different congregation leaders and they all go through the same thing. You know, it's like people coming in with their own agendas instead of with an attitude is of how can I, you know, if this is where you want me to be, how can I serve the Father? How can I help make this be a community, make this be, you know, a place that reaches the lost? And again, I'm not being critical, but I, you know, I'm sure Jesse's been in this for a while and he can agree. We see a lot of, you know, what they call the messiness in the Messianic movement, and that's because there's no order. Everybody wants to be a star. Everybody wants to have their own TV show, and nobody wants to do the other work. You know, a good friend of mine in New Mexico, he says they're selling their building because he goes, it's too much work for them because nobody wants to help. They have to go there and clean the building and, you know, set up and do everything because people say they'll show up and there wasn't. That's not how it should be. That's not how a community functions together. And, you know, again, in this walk, we've learned a lot, and we've, you know, and I pray that what we learn will help even other communities as well, because it's urgent that we walk in divine order and walk in the gifts and callings God has given us. And that's what I want to be talking about today. You have to be willing to be faithful and little before God's going to promote you. God has to promote you, and he will. If he's, you know, he's just saying, are you going to be faithful in doing this little thing? You may have to be faithful for 10 years or so, but it doesn't matter because you're doing it unto him, and your reward is the same because it's the body of Messiah working together. Now, what I'm going to hand out later, and I know a lot of issue is people don't know what they're called to do. So I've got a little worksheet here that actually will help you discover the gifts that are already in you. It's really kind of like a spiritual gift summary. It asks you a bunch of questions, and you, again, go what's in your heart, what you really feel motivated to do, and you'll find out what that gift, really confirm the gift that's already in you. And a lot of people, again, don't realize what God's called them to do. And there's many gifts within the body of Messiah. And the reason why the body of Messiah is hurting and not having the impact we can have is because there's no unity and there's, you know, there's no willing to work together to do what has to be done for the kingdom. So here we see, we looked at last week, I'm not going to go back on that last week, you get the videos on the website, but we see that spiritual leadership was appointed by God and anointed. He's the one who chose the leadership. So he chose Moses. He chose Moses when he was just a baby. That's why the enemy was trying to kill him. He was trying to destroy that calf to be the leader. Aaron was to be the Kohen, and when it was time to pass down that leadership, they didn't have a community vote. Okay, let's have, you know, people who want to run for, you know, Moses's leadership. It's like, you know, cast your ballot. No, God told Moses that it was Joshua who was going to be anointed to be the one to be the leader and bring the people into the land. Why? Look at the faithfulness of Joshua. Joshua was always there standing with Moses. When Moses went to the mountain, Joshua was there standing watch. He was always had a servant heart. And I'm sure he wasn't looking for Moses's position. You know, really, who would want that position? If you read all he went through, it's like, you know, you think you have problems with just, you know, 100 people or so. I mean, he had over 1 million people he had to deal with. They were constantly kvetch, kvetch, kvetch. You know, it was like, no wonder he turned gray. But again, it was God who told Moses who the leader would be, and it would be Joshua. And Ephesians 4, let's go to Ephesians 4, and we're going to see again how Yeshua put together the divine order that's to be in the body of Messiah. See, beginning with verse 8. Therefore it says, when he ascended on high, he led captive a host of captives, and he gave gifts to men. Now, I always tell people, the purpose of your gifts are not for you. The purpose of your gifts are for somebody else, so you can minister and use that gift to help and bless somebody else. Therefore it says, when he ascended on high again, he led captive a host of captives, and he gave gifts to men. Now this expression, he ascended, what does it mean except that he also had descended into the lower parts of the earth? He who descended is himself also he who ascended far above all the heavens so that he might fill all things. And he gave, who gave? Yeshua. Some as apostles, some as prophets, some as evangelists, and some as pastors and teachers. You can kind of look at this as in comparison to the Levites that God gave to Israel. They were the teachers and the instructors of Israel. For what? For the equipping of the saints, for the work of service, to the building up of the body of Messiah. So again, the purpose of that ministry is to train God's people to go out there and minister. For the equipping of the saints, again, why verse 13? Until we all attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a mature man, to the measure of the stature which belongs to the fullness of Messiah. As a result, we will no longer be children tossed here and there by waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men, and by craftiness and deceitful scheming, but speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects unto him who is the head, even Messiah, from whom the whole body, being fitted and held together by what every joint supplies, according to the proper working of each individual part, causes the growth of the body for the building up of itself in love. So again, the purpose of all our callings is not for us. It's for others, and it's to build one another up and build a community for Messiah. But unfortunately, you know, a lot of the body is still being tossed to and fro by every wind of doctrine, you know, especially now with the internet. I mean, it's like there's all kinds of goofiness out there, and we need to be discerning, you know, about who we're listening to, you know. And I always like to say, well, who are they accountable to? Is there any kind of accountability? You know, we have accountability because we work with Rabbi Silver. And, you know, again, accountability isn't telling you what you want to hear. It's telling you what you need to hear. It's correcting you when you need to be corrected. Otherwise, what good is accountability? You know, it's just the name. But everybody needs accountability. I don't care how high up you are. You still need to be accountable to somebody. We need to be accountable to one another as a body. So here we too, going back, when it was time to build the tabernacle, again, Yahweh instructed Moses to take a freewill offering from the community. The thing is, God already supplied everything that was needed, but he allowed them to freely give what was theirs to the building of the tabernacle. And we see, you know, when we look at these scriptures, as they gave so much that they had to tell them to stop giving. You know, we've got enough. We don't need any more. You know, shouldn't that be, you know, when the Father called us to do this, like over 15 years ago, one thing I told the Father, I says, well, if you don't provide our needs, I says, I'm not going to get up there every Shabbat and beg for money for an hour. You know, you go to a lot of churches and like for the first hour, they're asking for tithes and offerings. You know, I says, if you don't support us, you know, then I don't want to do it. I don't want to have to go up there begging. And God has always taken care of us. Even if it means people from the outside, you know, sending us money, God's always taken care of us. Because that's something, number one, we need to be convicted of. Again, you'll never, you know, again, our tithes and offerings are worship unto him. Proverbs, you know, 3:9 says we are to give the first fruits of all we have belongs to him. Why? Because we love him and he's the one who gave it to us in the first place. He's the one who gave us our jobs, our ability to do the job, the gifts, the intelligence, you know, the ability to make a living. And, you know, again, we can't do it with drudgery. I remember this one story, I'll never forget it. When I was a singles minister, one of the guys in the ministry, he goes, well, when he first learned of tithing, he goes, well, he came from the Catholic Church. He goes, all he remembered was when that offering basket would come, he'd throw in his $5 and then he'd watch it as it slowly moved away from him. And that just cracked me up. It's like, that's what we do. It's like, you know, bye-bye. Instead of seeing it as seed, you know, again, there's one thing that, you know, frustrates me a lot is not being able to have the funds we need to reach people and minister to people. Because guess what? It takes money to do what you need to do. When we put in the conferences, you know, when... But God's called us all to do this together. Again, we're not, you know, the type of ministers who, you know, preach a false prosperity. And it's not that God wants us not to be prosperous, because it's in the Torah, and I can prove it. But it's our attitude. And the reason for the funds, again, as a Jewish friend of mine, we were sharing, he said, the purpose of, we were sitting down, he goes, you know, those prosperity teachers are wrong. And I says, okay. And he says, you know what the purpose of prosperity is? I go, well, tell me. He says, it's to have enough to meet your needs and an abundance left over to help others. That should be our attitude for prosperity. God said he would meet all our needs. But wouldn't it be great if somebody needed money to pay their rent? It'd be no big deal for you to write out a check and pay their rent for them. You wouldn't have to think twice about it. That's the purpose. Again, we have to get our attitude right. the reason that God's, the reason again too that we support the ministry is so we can go out there and help people. Hallelujah. So let's go on. So the unity of the in the body of Messiah, so that we would walk in one mind, one thought, and one purpose. Again, last week we showed that God set up the order around the tabernacle. He told the tribes where they were going to be, what position they were going to hold, who the warriors were, again, who did what, and they were to set, when it was time for them to get up and move the camp, they moved in that exact order, with the tabernacle in front, and then every tribe in the position that God gave them. That's the kind of order we need to walk in the body of Messiah. You know, and I was thinking this morning, I was thinking of the pillar, and I was thinking, you know, you get awfully hot in that desert during the day and awfully cold at night. Well, you know what? That pillar during the day was like an air conditioning system. It kept them cool and comfortable. And at night, that pillar of fire was like a warming system that kept them warm. I mean, God took care of them in every aspect. I never thought of that before. I thought, man, they must have been hot in those tents. But God made, you know, it says that the sun will not smite thee by day, nor the moon by night. God provided a covering for them. So let's look again at gifts in the body. We looked at last week that God chose two men who he gifted to, again, be craftsmen for the items in the tabernacle. And it also says they went and they trained others who could help them, but they were the ones who were in charge of it. Here it says in Exodus 36:1, Bezalel and Oholiab, along with all the craftsmen whom Adonai has endowed with the wisdom and skill necessary to carry out the work needed for the sanctuary and to do exactly according to everything Adonai has ordered. So again, the pattern, God gifted certain people that he chose to do this work in the tabernacle, and they in turn trained others under them to make sure everything was done the way God said it was to be done. They couldn't just draw up their own blueprint and decide, well, you know what, everybody submit your blueprint, we'll pick, you know, the best one. No, God told Moses what the blueprint was for the tabernacle. So let's look at 1 Corinthians 12:4-5. Now, believe me, we're a congregation, we're a community. We want to see people walk in their gifts. We want to see people use. We want to work together. You know, but the issue we found in the past is like, you know, people would say, oh, we're here to help you, and then 2 weeks later, they're gone. You know, it's like you can't build a community that way. You need consistency. You know, and again, we're more than happy to help people, train people, to learn how to walk in those gifts and to be used by God. Because down the road, if Yeshua should tarry, which I hope he doesn't, and I'm still believing God for another 30 years, but who's going to take over? Who's going to be, who can step in? Again, God had already planned all along for Joshua to step in Moses's, you know, footsteps. He didn't just leave them, uh-oh, now what are we going to do? We don't have a leader. No, God already provided for that. But if we want to be used by God, we have to be a willing heart to be faithful. And that's important, is faithfulness. So again, 2 Corinthians 12:4-5, and I'm speaking from over 40 years of experience being in the ministry. Again, we didn't start out in this position, you know, 40 years ago. For over 20 years, we served other people. We did, you know, what was necessary, and realizing as I look back, it was all training for what God called us to do. And believe it or not, y'all, you're in training too. Everything you do has a purpose. Even the hard, even sometimes the hard things you've gone through and experienced, is God will use that for you to be able to minister to somebody else who's gone through that. Because you can say, you know what, I've been through it. I know what it's like to have a spouse who has cancer and to believe God for healing. I know what it's like to lose a job. I know what it's like for your spouse to leave you, or your family, your kids to run astray. But I can tell you one thing, God is faithful and he has always been there for me. You can encourage somebody else. Oops, let me go. Again, I'm sure you're all familiar with this, but, you know, it's good to go over it again. Now, there are varieties of gifts, but the same Spirit, and there are varieties of ministries and the same Lord or Master. There are varieties of effects, but the same God who works all things in all persons. But to each one is given the manifestation of the Spirit for the common good. And we're going to go into these other gifts later, but again, all our gifts are for the common good. Now look at Romans 12, 4 to 6. And we're going to go into these a little bit more detail as well. For just as we have many members in one body, and all the members do not have the same function, so we who are many are one body in Messiah, and individually members of one another. Since we have gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, each of us is to exercise them accordingly. And again, we're going to look at those gifts later. So here it says we have many members, many gifts and callings for the good of the entire community. Again, looking back, we were looking at, the different callings on the 12 tribes, the different, you know, anointings or functions that they were to function in. We see that each tribe was to position themselves by their own banner. And I look at, again, I look at the tribes as kind of a type of communities. Each community has a specific call and function. Well, obviously, our call and function is to teach the Jewish roots of our faith, to be a place to teach and send people out, but also to be a light to the Jewish people and to be a light to those that are hungering, that want to know more about this walk, and again, return to the walk that the first century believers walked in, and it was keeping the feast, keeping the Shabbat. And I know a lot for the hardest thing for people, I think, to learn to transition to a Shabbat, because there's, when you're going from a Sunday schedule to a Shabbat, it's like everything's changed, because people are used to, well, I do my grocery shopping on Saturday, I do my laundry, I do this, everything is functioning to do what you have to do on Saturday, and then, Sunday they'll go to church, but are they really treating that day as a sacred set apart day? Most of the time, no, they go to church, and then they went, boy, we got to get out, we got to get to the football game, we got to get to the ball game. So again, it's a transition to set apart that day, but I know those of us who have, I don't know about you, but our weekend got longer, even when I was working full time. Why? Because our priorities were in order. We did whatever needed to be done in those 6 days that God said to do it, and when Shabbat came, we could just relax. We didn't have to worry about anything, and that's when I was working full time. Not that I don't work full time now. I probably work more hours now than I did when I was working in a secular job. So here we see the pattern in the apostolic scriptures in the body of Messiah. Again, I look at the body of Messiah as a living tabernacle, the living tabernacle of Yahweh, Yeshua being the head. Again, we have the apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, shepherds, rabbis in some congregations, teachers, elders, deacons, lay people who, again, function in the work of the ministry. Each calling comes with the necessary ministry gifts and spiritual gifts to walk in that call. Every gift is needed to do what God's called us to do. Every gift is important. And as you're faithful, say, well, I really feel that I'm called to full-time ministry. Well, then prove yourself faithful in what God's called you to do, and he'll move you into that position. So again, each member has a call and an anointing and place in his body, his tabernacle. We need, and that's what we need to find out. What is my call? What burns in my heart to do? What stirs my heart? Again, look into your spirit. What do I, feel called to do? What do I love to do? Let's go back again to 1 Corinthians 12, 14 and 20. For the body is not one member, but many. If the foot says, because I am not a hand, I am not a part of the body, it is not for this reason any less a part of the body. And if the ear says, because I am not an eye, I am not a part of the body, it is not for this reason any less a part of the body. Now, can you imagine just an eyeball bouncing down the street? It's like, well, where's the rest of it? No, every, you know, and I love the, you know, the scenario, the illustration. Again, God is very illustrative to his work of the body. Because if you study the human body and you see how intricate it is, you know, it's not just the outside of the body that's the most important. It's what's going on inside. The smallest cell, when it is not functioning correctly, can destroy you and kill you. Yet it's, you can't see it. You have to get a microscope to see it, yet its function is very important. So again, God is trying to say, don't think that what you, the one you necessarily see is the most important. It's the ones that you don't see that are important. Look at the skeletal system. Where would you be without a skeleton? You'd be a blob on the floor. You know? Remember the movie The Blob? Just like blob. Where would you be without a nervous system? You'd be burning yourself every time you were cooking because you couldn't feel the heat. You know, again, every part is important. And sometimes the ones that you don't see, the ones that aren't up front, are the most important part of the body of Messiah, but God sees. So each tribe in Israel, again, is a type of different callings and communities in Messiah. As I said before, we need to get rid of the spirit of Korah, walk in unity, and walk in the gifts that God's called us to walk in. So let's go back to the Corinthians. Verse 18, but now God has placed, who's placed? God, the members, each one of them, in the body, just as he desired. So when we are functioning in the call that we're supposed to function, and we're trying to grab somebody else's position, we're fighting against God. We're trying to tell God, you don't know what you're doing. Don't you know that I should be the one teaching? Don't you know that I should be the one singing? You know, no, God knows the gifts. What Psalm 139 says, that, you know, before, when we were formed in the womb, he knitted us together, not only forming our body, but every gift, every ability, every calling that we were to call has been put in that body. Verse 21, and the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you, or again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, it is much truer that the members of the body which seem to be weaker are necessary, and those members of the body which we deem less honorable, on those we bestow more abundant honor, or less presentable members become much more presentable. Whereas our more presentable members have no need of it. But God has so composed the body, giving more abundant honor to that member which lacked. So again, here he's saying it's, you know, the ones that may seem like they're the least important in the body, you know, you may think, well, I'm the least important in this congregation. No, God says, no, you're not. You're probably one of the most important. We can't look down at what the gifts and callings he's given us. So again, the spiritual gifts are not for you, but for the body of Messiah. They are a manifestation of Messiah Yeshua. Your gifts aren't going to do you any good if you don't use them. They're just going to lay dormant. But the more you use them, the more they're going to manifest, the more you're going to grow, and God is going to, again, you'll see, you know, even more gifts come. But we have to be faithful in doing what God's called us to do. Yeshua walked in the fullness of all the gifts. Each member of the body is given the gifts that, again, he wills. So here are just some of the groups. There are three groups of gifts mentioned in the Brit Hadashah. A few gifts overlap, i.e. prophecy and teaching in some groups. You could, you know, you'll find when you're doing this test, you'll have multiple gifts, but there's some that'll be stronger. It's your strongest gift, which is the main gift that God's called you to function in, but you'll operate in other gifts as well, okay? Romans 12:68, again, we see the gift of exhortation, giving, leadership, mercy, prophecy, service, teaching. We'll go in that a little deeper. I'm just going over them now. In 1 Corinthians, we see, again, gifts of healing, helps, knowledge, word of knowledge, miracles, prophecy, teaching, prayer language. We have the ministry gifts, the apostle, prophet, evangelist, pastor or shepherd or teachers. Again, God was smart. He didn't give all one person all the gifts. because they'd become, it'd be like a dick, because then it'd be like, well, I don't need anybody. I got all the gifts. No, he made it so we need one another. That we can't function as a community by ourselves. That we, our gifts complement one another and make us, again, a part of the body of Messiah. The wisdom gifts, these are the gifts of the Spirit, word of wisdom, word of knowledge, discerning of spirits. The utterance gifts, prophecy, tongues, interpretations of tongues. And again, I like, you know, people have like their own cut and paste Bibles where they decide what they're going to, you know, what's true and what's not true. Well, I believe that was done away with. I don't see anywhere where it's been done away with. It says when the perfect has come, and the perfect has come is when Yeshua is ruling and reigning in Jerusalem, and we're in the millennial reign. We still need these gifts. You know, I don't believe we need to tithe. You know, again, it's like, well, okay, I don't like that, so I'm just going to cut that out of the Bible. And, you know, I don't believe that we need leadership. It's like, I'm just going to cut that out of the Bible. Again, that's why we're so messed up, is because we're not walking in the order that God's called us to walk. And an army cannot walk in chaos. And I've never been in the service, but I know, you know, enough about the service that, you know, when you go in there, you are trained to win. You are trained to survive. You know, you aren't trained to do your own thing. You're trained to walk as a unit. Every soldier, every unit has a job, and each other's lives depend on if that soldier is going to do their job correctly. And there's a brotherhood. There's a knitting together. I've heard of, you know, just different, you know, people who've been in the Army, veterans, and they said that there was a brotherly connection because you knew that person next to you, didn't matter what color he was, that person was the one that, you know, could save your neck. You know, and there was a bond there together. Well, the same thing with the body of Messiah. There has to be order. There has to be training. There has to be every person. Why? Because we're in spiritual warfare. And one thing the enemy likes to do is cause chaos. And where there's chaos, there's not order. And you cannot function in chaos. You have to function in order. You have to know how to take orders from headquarters, you know, because he's the boss, you know, and we hear from him and he gives us directions and we all work together. Again, we all have these gifts operating and we need them. There's the power gifts, faith, healing, miracles. Do we need this today? Yes, we do. So let's look at some of these definitions. Word of wisdom is a supernatural revelation from God given at a specific moment to reveal the will of God for a specific situation. And I'm sure some of you have seen this happen with you. I know at work a lot of times I'd come against a situation that I didn't know how to deal with it. I didn't know what to do. And I would just sit there and pray, Father, please give me the wisdom through the Ruach to know what to do. And all of a sudden I knew what to do. I knew exactly what to do and how to fix it. That's a word of wisdom. Or in a situation, you don't know how to you know, have the right words to say to somebody. God will give you those words. Why? Because he knows the hearts of all men. A word of knowledge is a supernatural revelation of facts pertaining to a person or situation, not learned through the natural mind, but is a fragment of knowledge given to freely by God for a specific purpose, usually having to do with an immediate need. And I think Derek Prince said this. They asked him, well, what's the best gift? The one that you need at the time. You know, that's the best gift. So in other words, you can be ministering to somebody, and all of a sudden God will give you a word about what's going on in their life, number one, to let them know that God knows the situation you're in and how to minister to them. Discerning of spirits is the ability to perceive or discern the spirit world. Get away from here. And especially to detect the true source of circumstances or motives. Let's look at Acts 5, 1 to 3. Again, we've been studying the book of Acts, and we went over this in great detail, but a man named Ananias with his wife Sapphira sold a piece of property. and kept back some of the price for himself with his wife's full knowledge, bringing to it a portion, he laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter says, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Ruach HaKodesh and to keep back some of the price of the land? So here, this is again a discernment that, you know, Peter didn't know what they were plotting, but the Ruach revealed it to him. Go to Acts 8, 9. Now there was a man named Simon who formerly was practicing magic in the city and astonishing the people of Samaria, claiming to be someone great. Let's skip down to verse 18. Now when Simon saw that the Spirit was bestowed through the laying on of the apostles' hands, he offered them money, saying, give this authority to me as well, so that everyone in whom I lay my hands on may receive the Ruach HaKodesh. But Peter said to him, may your silver perish with you, because you thought you could obtain the gift of God with money. So again, God gave Peter the revelation that this guy was not, he didn't want to do it to really minister to somebody. He was looking at it as a way to make a buck. And Peter says, sorry, boy, God revealed it to him that he was not, you know, being honest. Acts 13, 8 to 10. I mean, haven't you sometimes had people come into your life and, you know, you thought, you know, they just seemed really friendly and that, you know, they were just like, you know, great people. And all of a sudden, you know, the Ruach is like telling you, watch out, be careful. Why? Because God is trying to help you not to get hoodwinked. Again, we were, to be discerning. Acts 13, 8 to 10. But Elmas, the magician, for so his name is translated, was opposing them, seeking to turn the proconsul away from the faith. But Saul, who was also known as Paul or Shaul, filled with the Ruach HaKodesh, fixed his gaze on him and said, you are full of all deceit and fraud, you son of the devil, you enemy of all unrighteousness. Will you not cease to make crooked the straight ways of Yahweh? You know, now if a minister talked that way today, boy, is he mean. It's like, no, they told it like it was. It's like, why? Because he perceived in his spirit that something wasn't right. God revealed it to them. The gift of faith is a unique form of faith that goes beyond natural faith. It is a supernaturally surge of confidence with the Ruach HaKodesh, where an individual receives a trust and does not doubt in regard to a specific manner. Again, Abraham is referred to as the father of our faith. He had strong faith when God called him to go to a place that he's never been before, to walk away with everything he knew. He took hold of what God wanted him to do. Gifts of healing are those healings Yahweh performs supernaturally by the Ruach HaKodesh. The plural suggests that there are many sicknesses and diseases, and all can be healed. So again, certain people have an anointing or a faith too to believe for healing for people. Working of miracles is a manifestation of power beyond the ordinary course of natural law. We see that in Elijah and Elisha. I love studying them. You know how the prophets of God, and they perform, you know, awesome miracles of provision. You know, one of my favorite is the one with the woman that with the, you know, she was, again, her and her son were ready to die. And, you know, the prophet came and said, well, you know, here, use what you have left and make me something to eat. You know, and say, boy, is he a greedy prophet. He knows she's starving and he's taking the last bit she has from him. But, you know, he already knew what he was going to do for her. And he told her, get as many barrels as you can and go out and collect them and then bring them back to your house. And again, God miraculously filled these vessels with oil until they were out of vessels. And she had enough to pay all her debts, to pay all her bills, and have enough to live on for the rest of her life. That was a supernatural miracle of provision. Can God still do that today? Yes, I believe he can. Go ahead, because he's the same yesterday, today, and forever. But you look at the great miracles of these men of God. Yeshua walking on the water, rebuking the storm. Prophecy is a divine discourse by the Spirit to communicate a message from Yahweh for a specific moment, promoting encouragement and comfort. This year, we are a Spirit-filled kahila. We believe in the gifts of the Spirit. We believe that God, yes, speaks words of encouragement to us, you know, through his word or through a word of prophecy. Why? Because he loves us. I did a whole series on hearing the voice of God, you know, because I get tired of people saying, oh, you think you can hear from God? Ha, ha, ha. Well, it's like, this is what the word says. You know, how horrible would it be if God never talked to us? We have a connection. We have a relationship with him. And he'll warn us about things. So wait, we have to be sensitive to hear his voice and to listen to it and then to do what he's called us to do. We need, you know, again, if the first century, you know, congregation, body of Messiah needed these gifts and they were so closely connected with Messiah, you know, many saw him, walked with him, ministered with him, saw him rise from the dead, how much more do we need those gifts being, you know, almost 2,000 years since Messiah walked the earth? And in the times we're living in, we need these gifts today. We need to see the whole, you know, this congregation functioning in the gifts. Why? Because God gave it to us. You know, we can't pick and choose what we want to believe in the word. You know, I like this verse, but I don't like this one. No, it's like either you're going to believe the whole word or you're not. Different kinds of tongues is a gift of speaking supernaturally in a language not known to the individual. Again, the gifts of, the being able to pray in the spirit. There's many times when I didn't know how to pray about a situation, and yes, I pray in tongues, and don't tell me it's of the devil. Show me in the word where it says that. And I don't know. Somebody will say, oh, pray for me about this situation. I don't know, and sometimes I don't know what to pray. But I'll pray in the spirit because I know the spirit is going to pray exactly what's needed in that situation. And sometimes God will give me then what to pray in the natural over that situation. Praise God for that gift that he's given us. Interpretation of tongues. That's the gift when somebody gives a message in tongues that somebody else can interpret. It's not a word-for-word interpretation, but it's, this is what God is saying. But the greatest gift is the prophecy where they just give forth a word. I have been blessed many times where people in ministering, if I told you your names, you know who they were, had a word of encouragement for me. They didn't know what we were going through. They didn't know what was happening, but that word was right on. Why? It was the Ruach who was encouraging us at that time. We need that gift. And it kept me going. Administration, the gift that enables a believer to formulate, direct, and carry out plans necessary to fulfill a purpose. Again, administration is very important in a ministry. Artistry, the gift that gives a believer the skill of creating artistic expressions that produce a spiritual response of strength and inspiration. We see that again going back to the building of the tabernacle. There were certain men that were gifted with this artistic talent to be able, and if you saw, I mean, what they were able to do, and they didn't have, you know, a skill saw, electric saw, and all these fancy things. I mean, they used hand tools, and what they created was phenomenal. Why? Because it was a gift. God has given, I don't have the gift of singing, I'm not an artist. You saw my artwork, you know, she's not called to be an artist, you know. Look more like stick figures. Yet my son is very artistic. Why? He has that gift. You know, some of you, so what's the purpose of that gift? To bring glory to God. Because God can use art to speak to people's heart. But it needs to be used for his glory. Again, discernment, the gift that motivates a believer to seek God's will and purpose and apply the understanding to individual or community synagogue situations. And that's why it says, you know, out of the mouth of two or more witnesses, every word is confirmed, and how, you know, important it is to, you know, seek counsel from other people, other leaders. Why? So you get, you know, the whole picture, because there's sometimes you don't know what to do, but God will use somebody else to, who will, you know, get that discernment and be able to say, well, I feel God, you know, this is how we should handle this situation. We need one another. And evangelism, it's a gift some people have, you know, Minister Scott, he can talk to anybody, you know, about Yeshua. And, you know, he's not shy at all. You know, that's not my gift. I mean, if I have an opportunity, yeah, I share my faith, but he has a gift to be able to share with people. We need that gift. You know, again, the ministry isn't in here. This is the training center. The ministry is out there. That's where the people are going to come. You know, and we've had, again, in the past, people coming in thinking that it was their job to go shopping in our congregation, so because they needed members in their congregation. And I said, listen, if God really called you, then you need to go out there like we did. You start out by faith. I go, there's over 6 million people in the Chicagoland area. I go, if you can't, you know, if you're called to start a congregation, then if you can't find a few people out of 6 million, then you're not called. You know, but a lot of people think that, okay, well, God's called me to start a congregation, so I'll just go to congregation, see how many people I can lure away. No, then you're not called. Exhortation, the gift that moves a believer to reach out with the love of a Messiah and the Ruach to people in personal conflict facing a spiritual void. Again, they're a supportive type of person, you know, that, you know, they're exhorting you and encouraging you. We need those kind of people within the body. I want to go on kind of fast through these, but you'll have the notes. Faith, again, the gift that gives a believer the eyes to see the Ruach at work and the ability to trust the Ruach's leading without indication of where it might all lead. Again, we see that in the life of Abraham. You know, again, when God calls you to do something, he gives you a vision for that. He always shows you inside what his plan is for you. And we write that vision down, even though, okay, well, you can't see it in the natural, but we see what God sees. You know, so we prepare by faith so that when things manifest, we're there ready to work. We have the tools and what we need to do what God's called us to do. Giving, the gift that enables a believer to recognize Yahweh's blessings. There's some people, and this isn't just somebody, you know, we're all called to tithe, but some people just have a gift of supporting the ministry. They may be very successful in business. You go to some Jewish synagogues and you'll see, like, you know, they'll have like maybe 4 or 5 Torah scrolls. Your average Torah scroll costs anywhere from $40,000 to $50,000. But they have people in the, what they say, hey, we have this need in the synagogue. This is what we need. And people within the synagogue who have the means to say, well, we'll buy the Torah scroll. We'll buy what, you know, whatever is needed, we'll buy. We used to run a synagogue, so we saw this. And they'd put plaques on it, you know, donated by, you know, and they would, you know, give credit to who donated this. But everything, you'd look in the synagogue, the chairs, the Torah scrolls, everything was, you know, donated, right, by, you know, certain people. But again, that's it's beyond. There's just people that are just givers. They love to give. They love to help. And they have the ability to do that, not because they're looking for any credit to themselves, but they want to see the community blessed. Hospitality, the gift that causes a believer to joyfully welcome and receive guests and those in need of food and lodging. Again, that's one of the prerequisites for an elder and a deacon. They have to be a person who is hospitable, who is there, a welcoming of people and helping people and even bringing food to Shabbat. That's part of being hospitable, you know, taking care of the needs. And that's a gift. That's a calling. Intercession. I think this is one of the most important unseen gifts in the body, because this is where the warfare is in intercession. It's a gift that enables a believer to pray with certainty that prayer is heard, and when requests are made, the answer will come. We see that again. Really, it's a picture of it in Moses when he was praying, when Joshua was out to war, and he was holding up his hands, and every time when he held his hands up, they were victorious, but his hands started getting heavy, and, you know, it was hard for him. You imagine it holding your hands up for hours upon hours, but, you know, again, he had help that came along and supported his hands and supported him so his hands could be held up in the air. The intercessor, again, is the one who's doing that spiritual warfare. We're all called to intercede. We're all called to pray. But there's a special anointing on an intercessor who will pray and intercede for hours for the ministry, for people, for countries. And they know that's their call. And they, you know, I've had people that I barely knew really on Facebook, but they'd send me a message, you know, God's put in my heart to be interceding for your husband, to be praying for him, you know, and to be, you know, and that's, again, that's a gift. It's listening to what the Ruach says and standing in the gap to pray for that person. And we looked at that. Again, the word of knowledge is a gift that a person learns to analyze and uncover new sights with regard to the word of Yahweh and faith in order to teach others. It's, you know, especially that operates a lot in the gift of the teacher, God giving him, you know, him or her revelation knowledge in the word and revealing things to be able to share and minister to others. Leadership, you know, leadership is a gift. Some people are gifted leaders, and we need that in the body. We need, you know, again, we see in our heart, again, we have the vision. We see what we could be and what God has planned for us. We just need to encourage people to, again, walk in those gifts because we believe in plurality of leadership, you know, and we want, but we need to know that the person, if we call somebody to be a leader in a certain area or to be a leader with us, we need to know that we can depend on that person, that their heart is knit together with us, that they believe in the vision, that they want to help and walk alongside of us. And God will reveal, you know, reveal it down the road. Again, the gift of mercy, it's a motivational gift that he has. Again, that there's just a very, I have a strong mercy motive for people. My heart just goes out for people. Again, vocal. What a wonderful gift. I mean, some people are just born with the gift to sing. I know Jesse and Samantha, his family, they're very musical. They're very, you know, singing and stuff. It's like, I can carry a tune, but you wouldn't want me leading praise and worship. Especially I have a hard time with some of the canting because it's like, it's way off what I can sing. But there are people that are gifted to be able to do that too. But again, that's a gift. And the purpose of worship is not to put on a show. Okay, and unfortunately, that's what it's become in a lot of churches. I see some stuff that they show on the internet where they actually have, you know, they have smoke going on and lights and all this, you know, stuff. I go, that's not worship. The purpose, right, the purpose of somebody who's anointed to lead worship is to lead you into the throne of God, to prepare your hearts for the word, not to put on a show. And I go, oh, wasn't that wonderful? Oh, wow. You know, encore, encore. No, it's to use their gifts to glorify God, to bring you into the throne room so you could enter it in worship. If you are truly focused in worship, you know, God can heal you right during worship, bring you healing, bring you deliverance. And there's many a times where I was attacked with sickness, you know, or maybe like an asthma attack or a gallbladder, which God's healed. But I'd start putting on praise and worship and just focusing on worshiping him. Thank you, Father, I'm healed. I just worship you. And that pain would lift, that what was bothering me would go away. Worship is powerful, but it has to be used correctly. You know, we do what we can because we don't have live worship, but that's one of the things we're believing God for, that God is going to bring people in who are anointed and called to do that, to bring us in to worship. And we're thankful that we can go to YouTube and get some good worship. But you're limited that way because a true worshiper, a true person who's called to lead praise and worship is going to be led by the Ruach as well. And there's times where the Ruach may have him shift him or them shift to a different way of worship. Why? Because they're sensing the move of the Ruach and what he wants. And you can't do that with videos, but we do what we have, you know, we do what we can do. But again, we're believing God for all these things. And for us, it's real. You know, we see it. You know, we see it in the spirit. We're just praying, God, bring the people that you've called to be here so we can do what you've called us to do. Same thing with dancing. Davidic dancing is to worship him, to rejoice in him, not to put on a show. You know, it's to bring us into worship and, you know, and gather before him. And that's a gift too. I can't dance like I used to dance, you know. Give me a few easy steps, but you start hopping and jumping, forget it. Again, people are gifted musically with being able to play instruments. You know, I wish I would have, you know, stayed with my piano, but unfortunately I've got such short little fingers, it was really hard for me to stretch and get the stretch in. Same thing for guitar. I could play as long as the chords are real close to one another, but when you started getting those big chords, I'd be like, I couldn't do it. But it was a struggle for me. But some people are just gifted with music, and they know how to use their music to glorify God. There's even, and Jesse could probably share this more, but I've even heard that there's certain tones in music that are more promote more worship than others. There's negative notes, and then there's notes that bring you into worship. I don't know what, you know, minor chords. Yeah, there's, and if you listen to like the old, the classical music, you know, there, the classical music, a lot of these men were godly men. You know, they, and those, that music ministers to you, but you listen to some of this music, it's like, I'm sorry, I don't think rock and roll is made to worship God. You know, it's like, if you're putting in a concert, maybe it's one thing, but you know what? It's, again, music even has to be used correctly. Pastoring and shepherding, again, that's a call, that's a gift. You have a heart to minister, to be able to be a pastor. And yes, that's what we do. Again, we have a heart. Our heart is to just be, see people be all that God's called them to be. You know, that's our heart. And to help them and encourage them. Believe me, when you're hurting, we're hurting. You know, people don't realize that how connected, you know, if they really have a pastor's heart, we are to the people that are here. And when they leave a lot of times, you know, for the wrong reasons, it's heartbreaking, you know. Right, it's, right, it, you know, it's heartbreaking. Why? Because we have a connection with them. We love them. And, you know, the thing we have to learn as a body is nobody is perfect, and that includes leadership. But leadership is expected to be perfect in every single way, that if we blink our eye wrong, I'm not going to that place anymore. She blinked her eye with the right eye. She should be blinking her eye with the left eye, you know. Really, and it's, you know, I see too that pastors and shepherds are the most really disrespected in the body of Messiah when we just have a heart to serve. You know, we want to serve you, and it, believe, you know, we love you. We love the people that God brings here, and it breaks our heart when people leave. And again, if you have an issue with us, if you have an issue, again, if you're listening to this online with the leader, go to the leader, because a lot of times it's just the enemy twisting the thoughts in your mind, hearing, you know, misunderstandings, and a lot of times it can be cleared up if you just go to the person and say, well, you know, you said this, and I took this personally. You know, or, you know, did you mean this? And then, no, that's not what I meant. You know, because a lot of times we could maybe have a hard time communicating what we mean, and people receive it different. And instead of coming to you, they walk out in a huff and they just go to the next congregation. But guess what? When you were in the wilderness, there was no other congregation to go to. You know, you couldn't say, hey, I'm going to the Tabernacle down the street. You know, I like their way of worshiping, but no, it was it. You know, it's like you either told the line or you were stayed in the wilderness by yourself. Again, we need to work together. Service, the gifts of helps. Helps is what is again, it's a behind the scenes, doing whatever needs to do, helping set up, helping clean up, bringing food. I mean, there's all different, helping with the children, helping with the teens. You know, again, it's to help those that are led it, and it's so important in a ministry. That's, you know, again, I worked in all these ministries, and I was joyful to do it. I thought, hey, if this is what you've called me to do, you know, the rest of my life, that's great. You know, but again, helps is important. You know, with when everybody helps us tear down, you know, that means a lot to us. Woo. Again, we have people that are skilled with crafts, you know, maybe skilled carpenters, electricians. I remember this one congregation I went to that they rented a place, but the inside needed to be renovated. Well, they had people that donated their time in the congregation who were carpenters or electricians who had the skill to be able to do that. And in helping out, it saved them thousands of dollars of having to hire somebody because they had the skills needed to do it. Again, working together. Teaching, again, this is, there's all different functions in teaching. You know, there's, again, there's an itinerant teacher who goes from place to place, and they usually have a specific topic or specific thing that they minister on, teach on, and they're needed in the body as well. But in a congregation, again, we were sharing, we were talking about that a few weeks ago, you need to be all-encompassing. You need to, you know, there's a lot more than just, if I taught the same topic week after week, you'd really be sleeping in the pews. You'd say, that all she knows? You know, it's like, come on. But they're needed, but they're not to replace, you know, the congregation, the community. And unfortunately, that's what needs to be changed in the Messianic movement. We need to, again, focus on, because the heart is the community. The heart. Because that's where people come and they fellowship. They receive the word. They learn, you know, they learn how to participate and be a part of a community. And the itinerant teachers should come in and they should be working with that community as well. Not just come in, teach what they want, and leave. I mean, we've had that happen. We've asked them, well, could you particularly teach on this topic? And they come in and they teach on something totally different than what we asked them to. Well, that's not right. You know, we're paying your way. We're paying, you know, bringing you in here, supporting you, and you don't do what we're asking you to do. That's not right. It's working together. The itinerant teachers need to work together with the congregation, the community. And I always like to know, too, okay, who are these itinerant teachers accountable to? Are they a part of a congregation? Are they part of a community? Most of the time, they're not. They just go from place to place. So they have no clue what goes on half the time in a congregation. Again, wisdom, we looked at that. Writing, some have a gift of being able to write. I know God's given me the ability to do that. And that's something, even when I was young, I was always writing, always, you know, it was in me. But that's an important gift, you know, to be able to write a book and explain something to people in book form. Or write music or whatever, you know, that's a gift from the Father. So here we see at the end, this is to end this, and if you want to make comments when we're done recording, that's fine. We have the emissaries, which were the apostles. Of course, the apostolic calling is different than the first century church, first century, and we covered that in the Acts class. We have the prophets, which are really the preachers and teachers, proclaimers of the Besorah, the evangelist, the shepherd, and then the teachers. And then so here we see Yeshua provides gifts to the Messianic community. The emissary establishes congregations. The prophet speaks God's word to the community. Proclaimers of the good news import an effective witness for King Messiah so that the people turn from sin and accept God's forgiveness through the Messiah. You know, this is so important to, you know, be able to bring people into Messiah. And shepherds and teachers are overlapping yet distinguishable gifts. And a lot of times you may function in more than one of these positions. So we have in a community structure, you have your leadership structure, which again is the shepherd and our rabbi, spiritual leaders and elders. You know, as we grow, we see more elders being added on to that, but we have to be very discerning about that. We have the shamashim, who are deacons or deaconesses. They're the administrative help. And then we have members, the work of the ministry, inside and out. Again, this is all important part functioning of the body of Messiah. There needs to be a commitment to the vision. Again, we have the teacher in the congregation setting or an itinerant teacher. Again, we need teachers for children. We need teachers for youth. We need teachers for classes. There's, again, plenty of opportunities to use your teaching gift. Evangelist, you know, it's important that we get out there. We need teachers for youth and children's ministry. We're very protective of the youth, and especially the youth and the children. We do background checks. When we were, before we had more kids, we did background checks. Even if we knew the person, because again, we want people to know that we do due diligence, you know, even though we know they're fine. Prison ministry. I was in the prison ministry for 5 years. I used to go to Cook County Jail. I went to Menard. I went to the women's correctional facility downtown. I spent 5 years in prison ministry. It's a very important ministry. It's very important that if you're called to that, again, we support Rabbi Silver's prison ministry because he sends his books for free into prisons. But that's something that, you know, that's an important calling, you know, how important to bring this word into the prisons. And we used to, I've kind of lost contact with them, but a young man that's in prison, and he said the prisoners are taking on this messianic walk, you know, and they need the materials. Guess what? It costs money to send those materials. Nursing home ministry, that's a very important ministry. Again, hospital visitation, there's so many places that we can serve in their body that none of us has an excuse to say, I have nothing to do. Well, you got, God will give you plenty to do, just ask them. So this is, again, an outline of, again, our plan and our vision is to, again, we're not looking for people to be recycled from other congregations. You know, we want to see people that need, that are born again, you know, that can be discipled and become a part of the community, and maybe in some cases leaders are important, you know, parts of the community. And I'm not going to go all through this, I could share it with you, but we have a plan from the Father. Everything's in place, we just need the workers. You know, we have the training that's needed, we're doing classes online, but we need more teachers. We have, again, the holiday services, but all of these need extra people, extra workers to do this. And, we, you know, again, in our heart is just to bring glory to the Father for his kingdom and his glory. Hallelujah.